Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Dan Wolkin to the program now of Yahoo Sports. Dan, welcome in. First off, congrats on the new gig. Good to hear from you this morning.
Well, thank you. It's the first interview I've done where I've been introduced as Dan Wolkin of Yahoo Sports, so that's cool.
Making some history here on the program this morning.
Yeah.
Glad to do it. Well, Dan, let's just start here. We've talked a lot around here the last few years, as you can imagine, about the SEC, the nine-game scheduling, what that could eventually look like, and now we know it's going to happen in 2026. So what do you make of this move by the SEC to move to a nine-game schedule, and what do you make of, I guess, what that does for the landscape now of college football moving forward?
Yeah, on one hand, you sort of look at it and go, like, why is this such a big deal, right? I mean, it's okay, you go from eight conference games to nine conference games. But, you know, I guess within the context of what's going on with the playoff discussions and the SEC trying to outmaneuver the Big Ten, you know, it kind of just feels like another checkmate moment. The Big Ten has sort of been out on this island about what playoff expansion is going to look like. The SEC, I think, is a little bit more strategic. They kind of wait to see which way the wind is blowing and then go in that direction. And I think that's what we're seeing here. Like, the SEC looked at it and said, okay, this four guaranteed bid playoff structure for the SEC and Big Ten is not going to be really popular. So we want more at-large bids. The Big Ten says, well, I mean, if you're going to play eight conference games instead of nine conference games, we can't have that, right? My overall philosophy is just sort of as a conference, do what you do. Do what you feel like is best and let the chips fall where they may. But everyone is trying to outmaneuver everyone else. And I would say at this point, the SEC has thoroughly outmaneuvered the Big Ten with this decision.
Well, I would agree, Dan. My next question on the Big Ten is, okay, so are they going to back down from this, in my mind, ridiculous playoff idea that Tony Petitti has? And, of course, now they've floated the, you know, 2018 or whatever it is. But, again, the auto bids idea, the idea of the SEC and the Big Ten having more than the ACC and the Big 12. It was framed, or I guess it looked like it was about the nine-game thing, which, as you know, it still doesn't make things equal. And within these leagues, these schedules can be vastly different because they're way too big. But do you think this ultimately gets the Big Ten off that, or is Petitti going to keep pushing this?
Well, look, as we know, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten are kind of jointly in control of how the playoff is going to look. And if they can't come to an agreement, then it probably just stays the same for the foreseeable future, which frankly, to me, that's the best solution. If it just stays at 12, I don't really need to see a 16-team playoff. I don't think anybody does. I don't think even TV really wants a 16-team playoff. There's not really a lot of money or much more money out there for it. So, I look, the Big Ten, and I've got a column coming out on this today. It'll be my first column for Yahoo Sports. They just don't really seem to be able to read the room very well. And they sort of are putting out this stuff, 2018 playoff. Well, that wasn't really even like an idea. It was more of kind of a, you know, I would almost say, you know, like for the group chats, you know, it's the kind of thing you just throw out in your text chain, you know, and it wasn't really a fully formed idea, but they've just been on such a bad run of sort of messaging and public relations. They look to me like they're just sort of bumbling around, and the SEC is just kind of sitting back and saying, you guys can take all the heat here. We're just going to kind of roll with the punches and kind of come out with our hands clean.
So, Dan, we got a huge one, several huge ones coming up this weekend in week one. It's an awesome week one, but headlined by Texas and Ohio State, and you got the number one team in America coming into the season, taking on the reigning national champion. And as you've pointed out a few weeks ago, like, I think there's an assumption that comes along with Arch Manning that he's just going to be great. And I get it. I get the family pedigree. I get the fact that he was a high-level five-star recruit. But we've not seen him do it against high-quality opponents yet. So What's your intrigue level for Arch Manning and this storyline throughout the season, beginning on Saturday on the road against Ohio State?
Yeah, well, obviously it's a great game to start the season. And I think for both teams, it's one where we go in with a certain idea about what they're going to look like, but there's also big unknowns, both teams at the quarterback position. With Arch, I just don't want to be the guy committing to he's going to be as impactful or as good as Tim Tebow, which, you know, our friend Paul Feinbaum said he was going to be the best quarterback we've seen in college since Tim Tebow. I don't want to be on the record saying that when I haven't seen him play a significant snap. You know, he's in those run packages, short yardage, all that stuff. But in terms of managing a game, seeing how things develop in real time, the ability to make adjustments, the ability to read the game in real time. Like, these are just things that we don't know about quarterbacks generally until they get out on the field. We think we know, and then we don't. Obviously, all of the indicators would point to Arch being really, really good, but I just need to see it. And frankly, like, I'm not even going to make a lot of judgments off one game, whether it goes good or bad for him in Columbus. I just feel like we need more data. And at the end of the day, yeah, I think Texas is good and probably the team with the best chance to win a national championship because of all of the talent they have and the depth that Sarkisian's been able to put together through multiple recruiting classes. And I think Arch will be good enough, but I mean, I do think the range of outcomes for him is a lot wider than most people are giving it credit for.
Okay, Dan, I need to get you on this Tennessee offense. I have to get you on something Tennessee related. You know this, Dan.
Okay.
So Hendon Hooker cut by the Lions. It obviously did not work out. This is the latest quarterback that I'm completely wrong about going from college to the NFL. But my question for you, and look, I mean, I think I wrote like 3 years ago, Comedy Athletic, which is like this offense, coaches who run this offense, not just Tennessee, like they need someone to go to the NFL and become a good quarterback. I mean, obviously, this goes back to Baylor and guys who the offense, I think, frankly, made look better than they really were, and I think that's probably true of Hendon Hooker. Does it at any point become a problem for coaches who run this offense that quarterbacks and also a lot of receivers, not all, but a lot of receivers are not working out in this league because the translation is it's so different from the NFL game?
It's a great question. It's certainly not a new topic. We could go back to, you know, the wishbone and stuff like that, where, yeah, what is the job of the college coach? Is it to develop players for the NFL, or is it to implement the system that will give their program the best chance to win games? And obviously, if you're really hitting on both, then you're going to be in contention for national titles. I do think, and I hate to use the word gimmick because it's not a gimmick, but I do feel like there is a little bit of a expiration date on those kinds of offenses where, you know, they're not as complex. They're not running as many NFL style concepts. The receivers aren't running NFL style route trees, you know, all of those things. But at the same time, like if it does continue to put up points, then what's the complaint really, at least from a college standpoint? I discount the recruiting angle so much now because the fact that I would say 90% plus of players are going to make a decision largely based on the best financial situation for them, which is totally fine. But it's something to monitor. It's something to watch. But I also, like, if I'm putting myself in Josh Heupel's shoes, I'm looking at it and going, look at the number of games we've won like the last few years and look at how productive the offense has been. What's the complaint here?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, I guess I would also say, so if the financial conditions are relatively the same, does, you know, like, there's some post Nico spin, like, see, this is kind of what he was. I mean, it is a, I do still feel like at some point it would be good for them to just have someone, maybe Jackson Dart, right? Maybe he works out with the Giants, who basically from the same offense. All right, Dan, I looked at your X account. Very happy to see that the misery index is staying. You are continuing to do the misery index at Yahoo, which is a great thing. I also looked at these predictions, and I've got a couple I need to ask you about. You've got Nebraska as your surprise team, which is I could see that. And you are bullish on Belichick this year. You are bullish on Bill. What do you think about him and how that's going to go at North Carolina?
Yeah, I was actually shocked because we had that in our season predictions, and we all had to do – all of the college football people at Yahoo Sports had to do what – North Carolina's record was going to be. And I didn't realize I was out on such a limb. I picked them to be 11-2. And I guess my philosophy on it is just don't overthink it. It's Bill Belichick. You know, this is the ACC. Like this is not the AFC East. You know, it's not like they're playing murderer's row of opponents every week. Belichick is going to be able to outcoach people. He just is. Like, I feel like this is going to be kind of easy for him. And I know that's strange to say. I know that sort of cuts against maybe some of the narrative we've heard since he took that job. I just kind of come back to, like, look at the fundamentals. He's arguably one of the greatest football coaches of all time at any level. You know, is he past his prime or whatever? I mean, maybe. But I think there is talent on that team, and I think if they're just coached like 10 to 15% better, that's going to translate to a lot of wins, and their schedule's not that hard. So I don't know how long it's going to last, but I do think there's a chance that North Carolina is like, you know, a 9, 10, 11 win team that is people are talking about at least as a potential playoff team.
Well, Dan, great stuff, man. You're really kind with your time. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning. Congratulations on the new gig at Yahoo, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Yep, Dan Wolken, our guest here on Robbie and Rexwell. We'll react to what Dan had to say, get in some college football coming up next. Take your thoughts at 615-737-1025. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up later this hour as well. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game.
My thought is almost that you get rewarded for playing these games, you know, because I think you probably ask the majority of the coaches around the country, they're thinking, man, that's really hard thing to do is play that game week one on the road. Or at home, depending on the year. And so I think from a CFP standpoint, it's almost like check mark the box for a positive, that they were willing to play the game. Maybe they won it, maybe they didn't, but surely they put themselves out there and were willing to do it, you know. And I see so many people talk about, like, SEC scheduling and, you know, not playing Power 4 teams. In this conference, it's real. Like, we're playing real teams. We all are. And on top of our own schedule, and on top of next year, we're going to 9 games. And so you're looking at a real schedule. And so the goal is to be rewarded for playing in these games. Obviously, you can reward yourself by winning. That's helpful. But I just don't think either us or Ohio State, for that matter, is going to get punished for playing in this game from a CFP standpoint.
That was Sark. Looking ahead to Texas and Ohio State coming up this weekend. Joe, they're going to be rewarded. Win, lose, draw. They will be rewarded for playing this game. I am looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome. There are significant question marks, I think, with both teams, as Dan pointed out. Like, you know, there's a new quarterback coming in for Ohio State. So what's that going to look like? They lost a lot of talent from last year. Now it's Ohio State, so it's not like they're devoid of talent out there. So, and they potentially have the best player in college football in Jeremiah Smith. So a lot of interesting stuff on that front. And then Arch Manning taking over as starting quarterback for Texas. But some interesting discussion points there from Steve Sarkisian. Well, you can help yourself by, you know, winning the game. So we'll try to do that. We'll see if they can pull that off on the road on Saturday.
Yeah. I think this is – a game that obviously it's a huge game, and I do think with the record, what the heck is it called? Record strength? Is that the official metric? I mean, I'm not saying that, like, losing the game should not be taken into account. Like, if you get to a certain number of losses, it is another loss on there. But yeah, like, scheduling this game, it's almost like you get a mulligan if you lose it. Yeah, if you don't get blown out, you know.
Well, particularly if both teams are as good as we think they are.
Exactly. But I just feel like there's just the, because this is what we want. The stupid Big Ten plan would kill September, and they don't get that. They're focused on, oh, yeah, everybody in November is alive, and now the seventh place Big Ten team automatically gets in the freaking playoff. I mean, meanwhile, you kill September.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't matter. All that you have to just get in the top whatever of your league, you're in the playoff. So what we need is we want September to be great. For September to be great, not again, not saying that all these games should be mulligans if you lose them, but you want to reward a team just for the sentiment of you scheduled that game. That should be at least discussed among the committee. They went out and scheduled that game. Meanwhile, Indiana, sorry to pick on Indiana, but I mean, they are the prime example. They went out of their way to schedule three absolute tomato cans before they got in their league, and that should be penalized, at least in discussion.
You want to hear a hot take I've got?
Yeah.
I can't understand why people are going nuts about it heading into the year. LSU's going 7-5.
Ooh.
7-5 for the LSU Tigers. You heard it here first.
That is a hot take.
They will
take.
Lose to Clemson, Florida, South Carolina, Alabama, Oklahoma. 7-5 for the LSU Tigers this year. And that heat is going to get turned up real high on Brian Kelly at the end of the year. They got their schedule is pretty brutal when you look at it. Now, they do have Florida at home, South Carolina at home. But, you know, we got the game against Clemson coming up this weekend, which is also going to be awesome. Alabama on the road, Oklahoma on the road. I got Vanderbilt on the road, too, by the way. Ole Miss on the road, too, by the way. Yeah. Like they got a pretty tough schedule. 7-5 for the LSU Tigers.
Well,
who are currently ranked number 9 in the country.
Yeah, if they go 7-5 with Nussmeier, who, again, I think, looking at him, I think he's got a chance to be the most attractive NFL QB out of this group. I really do. If that's the case, if he's close to what people hope he is and you still go 7-5, that means your defense continues to be terrible, and that's a real problem. And I agree. Like, to me, that would not – I don't think Brian Kelly could be that close to being fired, but next year he'd be on one of the hottest seats in the game.
Maybe our entire team needs to be executed after tonight.
Nice. And also –
another great execution on his his joke status there.
Yeah, nice job, Brian. Also, you know, Bryce Underwood, of course, at Michigan, you know, what if he's really good this year? I mean, I don't think he's going to be great. You know, of course, he's going to be a freshman. But if it looks clear that like next year he's going to be a great QB and he's playing for them. Now, granted, do you get mad at LSU for the fact that this dude got $12.5 million dollars to go to Michigan?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, you know, you have to have a little bit of grace there, but still, that's a killer.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big year for them. You know, looking around the rest of the country right now, like when you start talking about SEC hot seats, we talked about this at SEC Media Days. Nobody got fired last year, which is just amazing to me in the SEC. I mean, it's usually at least one, most of the time more than one coach that gets fired. Like, again, I'm with you. I don't think if they go 7-5, 8-4, or not in the playoff, that Brian Kelly's going to get fired at the end of the year, but it makes next year pretty darn important for him that way. So that's something to keep an eye on there. Like, you know, we've talked about Arkansas and Sam Pittman, who felt like he was going to be fired about three times in that job and has not been fired to this point. And does it restart with Billy Napier, right? Like, Billy Napier in Florida have some expectation to him this year. DJ Lagway has been up and down in camp. He's been unhealthy. So what does that look like as the time the season comes around here? And, again, you look at the Florida schedule, and, yeah, they got talent, and the expectation for them is higher this year. But then you open up the schedule, and it's like, all right, so you still have Miami, LSU, A&M, Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss to play against this year. And Florida State, who knows what they are at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Pretty darn difficult.
No question about it. I got a couple quick hot takes to share.
Okay.
Penn State's winning it all.
Oh.
I think that's a hot take.
I think it is, too.
Penn State's going to win the national championship.
Okay.
You know, James Franklin absolutely deserves – he's 1-18 against top five opponents. That includes 0-3 at Vanderbilt. So he's 1-15 at Penn State. Largely, it does include at least, you know, I think probably 2 or 3 losses to Michigan. A lot of it's Ohio State. He just has not been able to get over the Ohio State hump. Which, look, if you want to be great, you want to be one of the greats, you want to, you should, like, you should be in contention and win it all at Penn State, and he hasn't been able to get over that hump. So it's fair. But I also think it forces people to miss a little bit. You know, his tenure right now, 11 years, is he has had more success than Paterno's last 11 years at Penn State. And yet Bill O'Brien did a good job of bringing that program out of the Sandusky stuff and you know, all that. But Franklin has done a really good job, and he's got to prove it, and Drew Aller has to prove it. That's the key. Is he going to put it all together? I'm saying he does. And
okay.
That all this stuff ends and that Franklin dunks on it, and that, of course, would be three straight for the Big Ten. They do look like the same kind of team with tons of veterans back that Michigan did 2 years ago, that Ohio State did last year.
Normally, I would say that the number two team, the AP poll, winning the championship does not qualify as a hot take, but I will allow it with Penn State.
Yeah, it's just yeah, you're right. It doesn't seem that hot of a take. By the way, apparently Chase hates the term hot take, so we have to make sure we say hot take.
Oh, good.
I mean, what else do you call like opinion that's a little bit controversial?
Spicy.
Yeah, exactly. Right, like it's a hot take. It's a little going out on a limb.
There we go.
If we can think of a better term, then I'll entertain it. But for now, I'm saying hot take. Another one. This is not apparently a hot take because, like at The Athletic, this was an overwhelming choice. I was shocked because I put this in, and I can't believe that 14 other people voted for this. Jeremiah Smith's winning the Heisman Trophy. I guess that's not a hot take. Like, I figured, you know, again, Arch, Nussmeier, Klubnik.
A non quarterback.
Some Jeremiah Love. Yeah, like quarterback usually wins it, but a lot of people are on Team Jeremiah, way more than anybody else at The Athletic, at least.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I thought that was a little bit spicier than it is. You got another one. Navy. College football playoff this year.
All right.
Which, of course, I'm telling you, do not – I mean, Blake Horvath, tons of guys back, all the skill guys back on the offense, NFL defensive linemen. And like Blake Horvath and that offense is so fun to watch. And, yeah, they are going to be the team. The favorite of the group of five is Boise State. Huge game, by the way, this Thursday. It's a 4:30.
Yes.
But Boise State at Alice Golish in South Florida, that is a gigantic game in that playoff picture.
There's a quarterback on Navy's roster that I used to babysit.
Really?
One that makes you feel old there. Yep. Shout out to Mason Baker, Hendersonville High School.
Mason Baker.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you play catch with him at all? Like, or do you do you have any sort of like, you know, part of his development?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
And probably primarily responsible for it, to be honest with you.
Well done.
So
man.
If Navy ever wins a national championship with Mason Baker at the quarterback, right here.
Dang,
I'll take credit.
That's awesome.
Between him and T Swift.
Yeah, there's a lot of development going on out
Robbie.
There.
Seriously, like, you're just churning out stars out of Hendersonville left and right.
A lot of development going on.
Good
up
job,
there.
Man.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the college football discussion coming next. Plus, a question from Rex Road about one of the most fascinating teams in the country this year that I'm interested to see how people respond to this. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. We will have another spot to give away in our Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League a little bit later in the show. The second spot of the week will be up for grabs, and we will have six spots in total to give away. So one a day until Thursday, and then on Friday we will give away two spots in the Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League. So looking forward to that. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. Joe, there is a team out there in college football that is going to garner a lot of attention this year, not because they are some traditional college football power or not even because they have the expectation of winning a national championship, but because they've spent a whole lot of money this offseason to build their roster through NIL. So as we look at it, Texas Tech, we've talked about this. I am rooting for total failure with Texas Tech and the way that they've constructed their team this year. I am interested to see how college football fans in general view them, view their expenditures, and whether or not they have any strong feelings for rooting for or against Texas Tech this year in college football.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed to hear that you are down on them. I think it's one of the most fascinating stories in the sport. I love the idea of anyone coming out of left field that's not one of the 10 to 12 programs you expect to be up there with the most money, with the biggest budget, et cetera, the most NIL, the biggest boosters, who's going to come in there. And, you know, this guy is
ranked one spot ahead of Tennessee. A little bit disrespectful. They're 23, Tennessee's 24.
And that's the thing. It's like, it's not like the expectations are off the charts for Texas Tech, but they still kind of are, maybe not from the preseason polls, but, I mean, the money they've spent, and Joey McGuire has said, like, this is the most talented team in the Big 12. This team should win the Big 12. He's putting it on himself.
Yeah.
Which I also appreciate. I mean, they've absolutely loaded up just in terms of if you look at the talent on their roster and some of the, you know, and in some cases have just really overpaid relative to what other teams are willing to pay guys because they've got, you know, they've got Cody Campbell, former lineman for Texas Tech, just absolutely strikes it big in the oil business and says, let's go, man. Let's just go. Let's. And of course, this year is the load up year too, because of the stupid NIL go garbage that is not going to work at all. But in advance of that, these teams have loaded up with some of their deals for players, so it's a huge number what they're paying. I would like to see them do it. I'd like to see them win and charge in there and follow up rather than fall flat on their face. I'm interested to know what the general college football fan thinks about that.
Well, the good news is the first 2 weeks they're going to look unbelievable. They play Arkansas Pine Bluff, and then they play Kent State. And if you're familiar with Kent State, not very good.
Pretty bad. Pretty bad program.
So Texas Tech going to look very good the first 2 weeks. I am very much confident in that. You know, like you said, you look through the rest of the schedule. You know, at Arizona State, be a tough game. Kansas State, we'll see what shape they're in and if their quarterback's family's fighting each other throughout the streets of every program, every stadium they go to at that point. But, like, it's very – their schedule is very navigable. Like, you've got Utah, Houston, BYU, but there's not that's not a schedule that you look at and you're like, wow, a lot of really tough teams that they're playing against on that schedule there. So they very well could end up winning double-digit games this year. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and you're right. Like they could be a little bit of a paper tiger.
Yes,
I mean the Big 12. You know, I think that there are a lot of good teams in the Big 12. Like I think Iowa State and Kansas State, both of them. I think those teams can go in other leagues and win a lot of games and be competitive. There isn't necessarily anyone truly great. Obviously, Colorado is going to take a step back. So, I mean, having a great record in the Big 12 may not mean as much to people this year. But also, what we think about teams in the preseason can change a lot. And who knows, like a Baylor could emerge out of there. But Texas Tech, again, on paper talent, best team.
They're the co-favorites to win the Big 12, according to FanDuel. Them and Arizona State at plus 550 odds.
And Arizona State is going to be really interesting. You know, losing Cam Scataboo. That is a loss.
How do you overcome that?
Well, that's pretty.
You think he's the greatest football player of all time? How do you overcome that?
Pretty freaking good, man. Yeah, pretty freaking good. He's going to do some damage in this league. But they still have Sam Levitt at quarterback, who would be probably one of the dark horse Heisman candidates. They just seem like a team that's ripe for you become the hunted after they're like picked last year. But that is a good example of the Big 12. And how there's some teams we may be sleeping on right now that may be better than we think. But I just feel like they're due for a step back.
Now, did you throw this next question in there just to get me to sound off on Shane Beamer or Eli Drinkwitz? Or was this genuine curiosity in your point?
Well, I know. I mean, I know your answer. But I just, like, Nick Saban gone. I think a lot of people, obviously not Alabama fans, but I think a lot of people other than that hated Nick Saban. I think there's also some begrudging respect for him. Yep. He was so good. But I like who is the most hateable coach in college football? Harbaugh's gone. Harbaugh, by the way, Harbaugh has been branded a cheater. He can't come back till 2038. I don't think I've given this take on the show. If I have, I apologize. I mean, people who think like this show cause is nothing for Harbaugh, you know, what if it doesn't work out with Justin Herbert? Is that not possible? Like
oh, it's possible.
In the next couple of years, Herbert's just not that guy. They're not that team. They're middling. They're not really a contender. Does Harbaugh just get to keep that job forever?
I don't think so.
Okay, so then if he gets bounced and all of a sudden he's not – remember, Jim Harbaugh, since that 49ers uprising, when he did a great job, it was a certain moment in time. He had Colin Kaepernick and he had a great defense. I mean, it was a huge disappointment at Michigan. Then things magically got better. We know now why, or at least largely why. So if you're someone out there hiring and then it doesn't work with the Chargers, you're telling me that guy wouldn't have to possibly look at college football for a head coaching job again? Because he's a guy who's going to want to coach forever. And you think that 2038 doesn't sting him? People dismissing that as a non-penalty, it makes no sense to me. But anyway, he's gone too. He was an obvious choice high on the list. Belichick's in.
Yep.
So who do you hate the most? Who is the college football? Dabo, I feel like, has kind of like...
Dabo's up there.
Well, I feel like just like his program seems to be revived and it's starting to like, wow, look at what he's done. I almost feel like he's less...
Snarky?
Well, he's just less annoying, maybe. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's like we've gotten away from all the, you know, they shouldn't pay players and whatever. Like, it's okay, just move on, dude.
So we I got feel like guts. Dabo.
Yeah.
Urban Meyer used to be up there.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He's out of there, too. So who is your hateable coach? Who is the coach you hate the
I
most?
Mean, from a national, like, putting my Shane Beamer bias aside, from the national view, I mean, the first guy that comes to mind is probably Brian Kelly.
Yep, me too.
Yeah, like Brian Kelly is probably that guy, would be my guess.
Now, James
like,
Franklin.
Yeah, James,
like, he's up there.
There are people that don't like him. Look, there are people that hate Kirby. I think it's a lot, largely because, you know, the coach that wins a lot is going to get some of that.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of viewing this just straight up guys that are pretty easy to dislike, and I think Brian Kelly is probably number one.
Yep, Texter agrees with you, says it's Brian Kelly. That guy is a doorknob. I did. Look, I totally agree. I mean, I've been familiar with him going way back before.
And he's been a jerk for a long time.
Yeah, before anyone knew who he was when he was at Grand Valley State and the whole time. And he's consistently been very unlikable. I mean, he's consistently – and this SEC, I didn't watch all of it, but the SEC, which is very good what I watched. It's the same thing. It's just like – yeah, it's hard. Like, how do you like this guy?
Yeah.
Like, how do you like this guy? I mean, if you look at his tenure at Notre Dame and how poorly it was going, I think you look at Clark Lee. Clark Lee deserves a lot of credit for helping turn that around. And some of it was just like, hey, someone who is a human who players like on the staff seems to be good to counteract what Brian Kelly does.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's got to be him, right? Like, there's. You know, I'm trying to think of who else would really even be close.
Like, I think, yeah, no, I think BK. You know, it's. I do think that it's like the coach who is unlikable and also actually wins. I mean, I think, like, what about Ryan Day?
Well, like
he got some pity last year.
Is he unlikable? Yeah, like I don't know that he's unlikable. He just, I mean, there's a lot of votes rolling in for Deion Sanders, but like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. There's some people that there's people who definitely don't like Deion, and that'll continue. And we'll enjoy
but they're
going to
win like five games this year.
The Missouri guy gets some slack sometimes. Drinkwitz?
Oh, yeah.
Well, for Robbie, and Robbie's not alone. I mean, Beamer and Drinkwitz are two extremely annoying.
I would say Drinkwitz from a larger college football scale. People look at him and like, look at this absolute nerd out there. Yeah.
Right. Good vote for Hugh Freeze. I think that's a good – I think Freeze is someone that definitely – Jake and Greenbrier can't stand Cignetti. I think Cignetti
– he's got some potential.
No, he's got potential. You know, especially like – I mean, I just think of like his game day thing before the game last – before the Notre Dame game was like, okay, calm down, man, please.
Yeah.
And now all of his – you know, bluster about the schedule when he should be embarrassed by his own scheduling. So he's a good one.
I mean, I guess Deion would be the other one, right? Like, people have strong opinions on Deion one way or the other. I don't think that he's, like, as universally disliked as like somebody like Brian Kelly is.
Well, and I do think that Deion, look, I mean, everybody hated how he came in there and how, to, you know, telling everybody you guys are going to be out of here, all this stuff and all the stuff. I mean, I think him battling cancer, being willing to come back and fight and then come back and do that job under these circumstances to show it wasn't just some stepping stone. I feel like there's less hatred for him now out there overall. Kiffin, someone threw him out. That's another good one. He's always hovering around the list. Dorkowitz, nice.
That's pretty good.
Mike Gundy. Daniel Ryan throws Mike Gundy out. Mike Gundy absolutely should be.
He should be on the list.
On that list
somewhere. Definitely.
No question.
He's a man.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is when a team nosedives like last year, you forget about people sometimes.
I'm a man. I'm 58.
God,
gotta just do it once a year.
So freaking long ago. Yeah. So depressing.
Plus, he always trying to like flirt around with another job only to go back to Oklahoma State.
Hit the Rays, yeah.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad is coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I'm wrong all the time.
We had a love fest. We all kind of gathered around. We hugged each other.
Drop trowel. I'm going to stick this in your ass.
Geographically?
There's not a south part of Detroit?
It's just north,
south,
east,
east. A lot of people are asking about the gout.
Delicately and tenderly shown the ways of flavorful meat love.
I'm right sometimes, too.
You know, somebody's rats around here, so.
Oh, my God. My ass is burning.
Gonna get to you, girl.
You know, I knew a couple of those things you said yesterday had a chance to make it in the rotation, and boy, they sure did.
Immediately they did.
Yep. Just beautiful. I love it. It's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad.
My goodness.
Joe, the floor is yours.
Thank you.
Yep.
It's very regrettable that I talk into microphones. Okay, let's go back to this offense. I find this to be a great topic, and let's go back to what set off a little bit of a storm yesterday, which was my colleague at The Athletic and friend of the show. We haven't had him on in a while, but you know, Ted Gwynn does. He's a film guy for us, NFL film guy for us. He's a big. He does, you know, most of his stuff is X's and O's with football. He knows his stuff. And he quote tweeted news tweet about Hendon Hooker being cut by the Lions. And this is what he said. He said, quote, "That Tennessee offense puts skill players in a developmental hole." Then he follows it up and said and says, and clearly, you know, let's see, how much longer after it was? About 4 hours later, after, my goodness, the storm of tweets from Vol Twitter that, and I read some of the, you know, I read some of the replies, and some of them were just ridiculous, and some, you know, it's a good argument, but this is what he says then, is he says, quote, "Tennessee fans seem shocked by this, but the offense has the QB waiting for an isolated receiver to run a deep choice route, extremely productive in college with the right talent, doesn't translate to the pros." And he goes into, he quote, he also shared something that Dante Thornton said recently. And Thornton, by the way, has made some inroads. And by the way, Cedric Tillman's about to be QB2, I believe, or QB2, wide receiver 2 for the Browns. You know, Jalen Hyatt, big year for him. It's not like there's nobody who's doing anything in the NFL. But this is a quote from Thornton. Quote, "That was mostly every team's main talking point, was asking with the offense that we run here at Tennessee if I'm able to run those pro-style routes. I had to be very intentional playing two seasons here at Tennessee. We don't have the same wide route tree that most pro-style offenses have." That's just, end quote. That's just the reality. Yeah.
So this is a fair discussion. I don't know what it means. We've been talking about it for years. I've written about it before. You know, the question here really is, to me, it's the recruiting impact. And maybe Dan Walker said, does it matter? First of all, people do make financial decisions, right? Like Bryce Underwood went to Michigan. He was going to go to LSU. Michigan, you got a Michigan alum who is the wife of one of the richest men in the world, basically said,
can you throw out a few mil here so I can get a buy a QB for my alma mater? And then she combined with Dave Portnoy, who's unbanned from Ohio Stadium?
Now, apparently so.
Okay, that's great. And so they bought Bryce Underwood. $12.5 million. I think it can go up to like $15 million or whatever. So obviously that's a huge part of the decision. But also, Michigan runs an offense that translates. Michigan just sent J.J. McCarthy to the NFL. I still think there's a lot of people who are like, yes, we want the money now. We're going to get the money now. You're going to get a couple million a year if you're that level of prospect. But what place gets you ready for the NFL? Because if you are good in the NFL, well, you can make $250 million. Is that a little bit different than $12 million? Yeah, I think it is. So we have the avalanche of Vol homers who go off. And the quote tweets on Ted Gwynn, it's just a stream of, well, actually – this isn't about the offense. This offense just made a bad player look good. So now all of Vol Nation is Hendon Hooker sucked, has no talent. Josh Heupel propped him up, and that's that. Here's my thing, and it's so true in so many things. It applies to so many discussions. Why can't both things be true?
Yeah.
I think both things are true to a point. How much? I don't know. I do think that Tennessee and that offense made Hendon Hooker look better than he was. He was a backup at Virginia Tech. He didn't have a lot going on. He also had been hurt at Virginia Tech. He had incredible numbers at Tennessee. But it is a very fair question about this offense and whether it does prepare you. It is like an old option offense. It's just not like they do in the NFL. And I think that at some point it could be damaging to recruiting. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's possible. Why can't both things be true?
Yeah, it's a fair question to bring up. And again, you know, they need a quarterback to move on to the NFL and have a good NFL career, or at least the makings of a good NFL career. And, you know, you thought for a while maybe that Nico had a chance to be that guy, and then he up and bolted, and we'll see what he does in his career. But even if he goes on and have a good NFL career now, he's not going to be traced back to Tennessee because of that. So it is what it is. To your point, it has not hurt them in recruiting yet when it comes to the quarterback position. You know, they've got Faison Brandon coming in, who is,
big
depending
time.
On where you look, the number one recruit in America. So they got him coming in. I mean, look, George McIntyre is a pretty high-level recruit, right? So, like, they have been able to recruit the quarterback position very well under Josh Heupel. But I do wonder, like, if some point it comes along and – they look around and they say, you know what? It's just such a – there's just so much limited evidence of this offense translating to the NFL. Do I have to think about going somewhere else? And we spend so much time on quarterback about that. But I think the Thornton quote kind of tells you that the offense as a whole – like I remember some of the discussion about Dylan Sampson. It's like, all right, well, how good is Dylan Sampson really? Because the offense that he runs at Tennessee – is tailor-made to open things up in the running game, and you're just not going to get that in the NFL. So I think it's fair questions to bring up about the offense. I also think, you know, look, Joe Milton clearly got better at Tennessee than he was at Michigan. I mean, Hooker definitely got better at Tennessee than he was for Virginia Tech. So
yep.
It can be both things. I know this. If I'm Georgia – if I'm Alabama, if I'm Florida, whoever in the SEC, I'm in a recruiting battle with Tennessee for a quarterback or a wide receiver, I am screaming this from the mountaintops right now because it absolutely has been and will be used against Tennessee until somebody gets in the NFL and proves differently.
Yeah. Look, and sometimes it's circumstantial. I mean, for a long time, like Ohio State just didn't have quarterbacks who were working out in the NFL. I don't think it was a system thing at all. It was working out. And now, of course, that has changed. But this is system based, you know. And I'm absolutely, if Tennessee and Georgia are the top two for like, oh, we got to have this guy, that's Georgia's going to hammer that. And maybe it doesn't matter, but I don't think that you just ignore this. And you know, I know this is also for some people now coming back on the Nico thing. Like, see, this is really what it's about. I don't buy that. I think it was about them trying to get more money, but was it something that they discussed? Like, is this really the best way to get Nico to the NFL? Maybe it's better to try something else. Someone says, I see the argument, but Tillman, Hyatt, Hooker, Milton, Velus Jones, Darnell Wright were not getting drafted prior to Hopper arriving at UT. You're wrong about Darnell Wright. Darnell Wright was a talent. You're right. I agree with you, Robbie. Milton, Hooker, of course, they got better. You know, I think talents like Hyatt, Tillman, I think they get played in a lot of different systems, and they're good enough to be in the elite. I think Samson, it may make it easier, but at least it as a running back, it's not like it's some translation issue. You know what I mean? Yes, the box is lighter, but like I think Dylan Samson's going to be good in the NFL. We saw that. He's a good player.
And look, if I'm Tennessee, I think, you know, what Wolken brought up earlier in the hour, what's your job if you're Josh Heupel? Is it to get people to the NFL that play well, or is it to win games? It's to win games. Now, if you can do both, great. That's awesome. But, like, his job is to win games for Tennessee. So, I'm not changing the system. Like, I think one of the things you're hearing out of Tennessee camp right now is, like, Joey Aguilar is operating at a pace where they're running their offense, and it's going fast. And, you know, that's been a complaint they've had the last couple years around there is Milton and Nico couldn't do it. Like, they couldn't run it as fast as they want to run it. So I'm not even advocating for them to change their system. What they need is for a high-level recruit to come in at quarterback, a guy like Mike Matthews starting this year to be incredibly productive, and then get to the NFL and be that guy. Like, look, Mike Matthews is a five-star recruit. He could have gone to a lot of places in the country and gone on to the NFL and be a good player. We'll see what it looks like for him, but that's what they need. They need a guy like Matthews to be really good for them the next 2 years, get into the NFL, and be one of those guys at wide receiver. They need, whether it's George McIntyre or Faison Brandon, to play really well in this system in college and then go to the NFL and be a good starting quarterback in the NFL. And if those things happen, then people are going to shut up about this. But until then, they're not. It's going to be a thing.
Agree.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll continue this conversation, plus another development in the NFL that, you know, maybe the Titans should take a look at when they start looking at their roster on the bottom part of it today. We'll get into all that coming up as well next hour. We do have a fantasy football spot to give away in the next hour as well. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.